Hey everyone, it's Ben and Kaylee back with our latest Vasculitis Visionaries podcast episode, and today we're bringing a kind of a nice transition in from our last episode, from the second part of the last episode we just had, when we talked with a lot of the young adults in our community, with Brandon Hudgens, Allison Ross, and Kate Tierney. And for us now, we're getting to talk today with one of the younger members of the medical professional community that has been involved with vasculitis, in a Dr. Amir Hussain, who both Kaylee and I got to meet back in 2017 at the VF's International Symposium in Chicago. So, Kaylee, it's a really exciting interview guest to have on, not only because it's somebody young we could more easily relate to, you and I as mid-20-somethings who have been diagnosed with vasculitis now for 5+ years, but somebody who has been very passionate about research and advancing a lot of the goals that we've had as vasculitis patients and as a community as a whole. I think it can teach a lot of even older medical professionals who have more of just a general sense of vasculitis about a lot of the things going on and a lot of the current developments.
Definitely. And I think Dr. Hussain has played a very large role in terms of the Vasculitis Foundation's mission. He actually was the one who encouraged me to attend, as I mentioned in our first episode, the 2017 symposium, which is where I met you. So it's kind of full circle here. It's great to have him on.
Right. Yeah, you're right. It all comes around. And we also, the three of us, what we have in common in addition to that is that we all teamed up with the VF to provide little PSA videos at this point a couple months ago at the start of the COVID outbreak and during the pandemic, just to remind people of practicing safe social distancing methods and all of that. So us three, like we all have those little individual short videos available on the Vasculitis Foundation's YouTube page. As far as, and Dr. Hussain, we talked about the symposium in Chicago. That's where he studied, and that's why he had attended that particular symposium, and he ended up graduating with his public policy degree there and is now out on the East Coast, kind of near you, Kaylee. This has become a theme where all of our guests seem to be near you in Washington, D.C., while I am in San Diego on the West Coast. But he is a resident now of internal medicine at Hofstra University, and he'll be starting his dermatology residency shortly at Georgetown. And Amir's from the East Coast, so it makes sense as well. I feel like we've had a lot of Georgetown guests as well. I don't know how that happened, but
no idea.
is what it is at this point. So you two will be in the same area while I'm out here on the West Coast. But really exciting interview, and I'm excited to get to Amir. And I know you've viewed and read a lot of his work, as he writes a lot of articles about health policy and a lot of other things in that realm as well.
He does. He has a really interesting take because, as you mentioned, in addition to his medical degree, he also has a master's in public policy. So he talks a lot about healthcare policy. He talks a lot about the intersection between healthcare and spirituality. He has a lot of thoughts and articles that he's written about what needs to happen in terms of med school education. So I think he's going to have a really interesting perspective in terms of younger doctors and physicians learning about vasculitis.
Absolutely. So Dr. Amir Hussain, our guest right after this on the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast. Hey, everyone. Before we get into our next segment, just wanted to give you all a heads up about a really fun event that Kaylee and I are actually going to be hosting coming up in June that will be benefiting the Vasculitis Foundation, and we would really enjoy having you there. We want to let you know to mark your calendar for June 20th in 2020 and join us for the first virtual fundraising event, the VF Pajama Party, full of entertainment, inspiring people, and a few surprises. Tickets will go on sale on the Vasculitis Foundation website coming up on Monday, May 18th, 2020. Let's welcome in now Dr. Amir Hussain into the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast. Kind of a crazy time right now for Amir, and I mean, so much has changed, obviously, even within the last couple months. But since Amir, I last saw you, it was last summer at the 2019 VF International Symposium in Minneapolis, and we're not quite a year out from that. But You're now doing your residency, as we just mentioned, at Hofstra, and you've been working in New York right now during the COVID pandemic. So first off, thanks so much for joining us. There's a lot we want to talk about with you, as you're kind of alluding to in our intro, but I'll start by asking, what has it been like to be a doctor right now in the current climate we're in, and in basically the epicenter, at least in the United States, of where everything related to this virus has been circulating?
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here. Yeah, it's been a pretty crazy time being in New York, as you mentioned, the center of this pandemic. I will say I have the privilege of being at a very well-resourced, well-managed hospital. So there's a very clear delineation of where we're supposed to go and what services we're supposed to be on. And our hospital does actually have enough PPE in stock. So I am still putting all of us are putting ourselves at risk to see patients, but that's part of what we signed up for when we signed up for medicine. So the hospital seems to everyone is on the same page. Like all the staff is a great team. We've actually been sending each other care packages. So we sent a bunch of care packages to the respiratory technicians, the nurses, environmental staff, and then other residencies have been sending each other food and cookies and stuff. So it's a tough time, but also a great time for teamwork.
Yeah, and I was wondering too, like with Kaylee, I mean, you're also on the East Coast, and I was joking about this earlier. I feel like I'm just isolated. All of our guests seem to be East Coast based, and Kaylee, you're in DC. I mean, you're not too far from New York. Have you know, as we've kind of gone through this, have you seen a lot of the similarities? I know you're not in a hospital on a daily basis, but you've had a lot of communication with, as a public health major yourself, just with people in that. In that environment, I mean, are you thinking some of the same things I'm sure that Amir has in being in New York?
Sure. I think DC right now is a little bit calmer, just in terms of the number of cases we have and the infection rates. But I definitely, as someone who did not go into medicine, but almost all of my friends did from college, it definitely is making me nervous. Just knowing everyone, like Dr. Hussein and other people that I studied with, are all on the front lines of this. I'm going through my husband actually has a pretty intensive first aid kit. He's just very prepared. And so we pulled things out of there to send to some of my friends at less well staffed and less well I guess PPE affluent hospitals up in New York, just because we know things are getting pretty bad. So definitely thank you to Dr. Hussein for what he's doing and everyone else on the front lines as well.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a good thing you point out, and we're certainly wishing you all the best, Dr. Hussein. And for that, we're really glad that you're able to take some time out of what's, I'm sure, been just a crazy, hectic, busy stretch for you. And it kind of lets us transition into the main topic of our podcast as a whole, as we've really tailored this for the medical community and trying to increase not only awareness, but also education about just the latest developments in vasculitis for a lot of medical professionals out there. And I feel like it's one of those things that is probably the same for a lot of different groups that deal with rare diseases, where your goal is always, you want the next wave of doctors to have more of an understanding, and you want young doctors to get involved and have that interest, which is a lot easier said than done. On paper, it's easy to say, all right, we want so many number of young doctors to come out of med school and say, hey, I want to study vasculitis. I want to study this type of rare disease. But it's something that I'm sure is not always as straightforward as that. But you're obviously somebody that did go down that path, and so I'm curious what led you into it and what piqued your interest so specifically. I mean, obviously for Kaylee and I, it's from getting diagnosed as patients. It sort of forces you into having that specific interest. But what was it for you in a time where I feel like, specialists have, there is the increase in specialization in medical professionals. So what led you into this specialty, at least in your own interest of the field for vasculitis?
So this started when I was in medical school, and the way our school, University of Chicago, taught our second year curriculum was a course called Clinical Pathophysiology and Therapeutics. It was basically a long word, but essentially means taking us from the basic science of a disease to the symptoms, and then after that, trying to put those together into a disease pathophysiology and come up with treatments. So when I was learning about different conditions, a lot of them seem pretty straightforward. So, cough leads to certain things, shortness of breath leads to certain things. But then when it came to some diseases like vasculitis, it was actually really complicated. So patients could present with all sorts of things that were similar to other diseases, but also had weird overlapping organs that were involved. So I was just thinking to myself, like, I don't know how I would actually put this together if I saw someone with these different symptoms, and how would I actually figure out that this is a specific rare disease that they had? And I remember talking to one of our lecturers. We only got one lecture in pretty much all of medical school on vasculitis. I went and talked to her afterwards about her work, and it just seemed such an interesting community to be involved with. And she mentioned this conference that was going on. And after that, I came to like the 2017 conference, which happened to be in Chicago, and getting to meet more patients and the whole like treatment community and the provider community, it really gave me a lot of insight into how these rare diseases are such a tight-knit group of people. And I really wanted to like continue being part of that.
And so when you talk about the lecturer, is that Dr. Dua that you're talking about?
That's right, yeah.
Yes. And so that is that how you, because I know, as you mentioned, a lot of different organ systems can be involved in vasculitis. There's a lot of different presentations, but you've really gone the dermatology route. So can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's pretty unique.
Yeah, when I got interested in dermatology, it was around the same time during the year. And I found it when we went to a patient conference. So they had patients with certain physical examination findings come in and talk to us about their experience. And I noticed that many of them had these like multiple overlapping organ disease. So like, you know, brain issues, nerve issues, blood issues, you know, all sorts of organs. But when you ask them, if I had to pick one organ that you wanted to be fixed, they would all say their skin. And I figured that it was because the skin is so obvious to everybody that whenever you're walking around in society and someone notices like your skin condition, they immediately will know that you have some disease. However, with some other organs, you might have, you know, fulminant liver or kidney failure, but no person in society would recognize that's an issue. So I think the skin was so important to me because I figured that if you could make a difference on someone's appearance, they could fit much better into society and have a much better experience. And you could drastically improve their quality of life, even if you couldn't really do much for their other organs.
That's a really interesting way to put it. I hadn't really thought of it in that context, but like as a patient, and I remember having all the lesions and just that was sort of towards the end of my pre-diagnosis phase. I don't know, Kaylee, if you had the same thing where I, before my EGPA diagnosis, it was all the skin rashes and like my hands were literally beet red. And of course my parents, as even for them as ER doctors, they're like, yeah, something is clearly wrong with you. So I can relate to that. And I feel like it's a good way to kind of apply it going forward. I also just think about like your process in going through medical school and how fortunate, I know you've talked to this in the past, how fortunate you were to get introduced to somebody like Dr. Dua, who's done a tremendous amount for our community. And like I had the chance to sit in at the ACR's panel last fall in Chicago, where she led one of the number of discussions trying to come up with the most current and accurate up-to-date vasculitis guidelines. But I, from having some friends, and I know like Kaylee has a lot more friends in the medical community than I do, but even having just a few who've gone through that process, whether it's through PA school or through medical school, it's always been like, and my parents had the same experience back in the 80s when they were at Loyola, actually in Chicago, in their med school, where they essentially learned about vasculitis maybe on one slide in one lecture on one day of a whatever 4+ year experience where you're just learning so many different things. And so it's so hard for it to stick. It was that kind of the same experience for you? Did it just happen to be that you had an interesting educator that and it kind of just stood out in that way? Do you feel like there are going to be any changes in that? I assume you probably hope there are, but as for now, is it kind of the same? I mean, as far as really no change in the way we teach young medical professionals about vasculitis since it was first discovered, I guess?
Yeah, I think most schools have a similar model to what we have. And actually, more of them are moving towards like problem-based education, which means that you get a patient case and learn about the disease afterwards. Whereas I think our curriculum used to be where you would learn about all the diseases first and then try to apply it later on. This is kind of the discussion going on in medical education. But one thing that I going forward is that one of the major exams we take called Step 1 is becoming pass or fail. And this exam tests like basic science knowledge. And there's been a criticism that it tends to test more obscure diseases. And vasculitis would fall into that category. And students, the way they would score well on this exam is learning more and more about rare diseases. And since this exam is going pass-fail, I have a feeling that students are going to be learning more about the common things that you see and maybe focusing less on some of these obscure things. So that's kind of a tension right now in medical education on how much do we value the general like epidemiology, public health aspect of what's more common, but also how do we make sure that doctors are equipped to deal with pretty much anything that comes in the door.
That's really interesting. I didn't think about that implication for step one. I was like, oh, pass fail, that's great. Not as much of a weed out, but wow, that's fascinating thinking about what that means for patients like us, honestly.
I thought medical school was supposed to be hard. Journalism school, based on what you just said, was harder for me being at University of Missouri. I mean, come on.
Don't worry. There are, like, what is it, 4-step exams?
There's 3 total steps, but one of them has 2 parts. So it's basically like 4, yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, don't worry. They're well-trained. So I guess in addition to, well, actually, no, let's get your thoughts on step one, pass-fail. I know that you, I think, wrote something about that recently. What do you think? Do you think it's a good move? Do you think it needs to be accompanied by other changes?
Yeah, I think in general, it has pros and cons like any major change. This is probably the biggest change in the past 30 or 40 years in education for medicine. And I think the benefits of it is that people were using this as a weed out when it really wasn't designed for that. It was just designed as like a basic competency exam. So for that reason, a pass-fail exam makes more sense. The challenge with it, though, is that medical education is like rifled with bias. So there is like so many ways that students get weeded out for non like objective metrics. And as tests are not 100% objective, as we know, but it's still among the better ways we have of standardizing education. So one thing I wrote in my article was that students from prestigious medical schools are going to have a huge advantage now because there's basically no way to compare them against the not as prestigious medical schools. Step one was really the only equalizing factor, but now it's going to be based on like research and connections you have. And the students at these more prestigious schools tend to have more opportunities in general. So I think step one pass-fail is a good move in terms of education, in terms of it'll focus people on more important things and not such like obscure things. But the challenge is that we need like a better way of selecting students overall. And I'm not sure that this is the way to do that.
And so going off of that, would that mean that there'll be a change in who gets accepted to residency programs?
Residencies really haven't decided a way to select students. They tended to use step one in the past. Honestly, because they were kind of lazy, it was a way to weed out a ton of students with a very like straightforward metric. And because they had step one, they never really had an incentive to change their evaluation criteria. So one benefit of this is that they will have to develop better criteria. What people are worried about is that they will start to use step two, which is the next exam after step one. And it is a better test in terms of it correlates more to like clinical skills. But the challenge is that it's just the same problem. You're going to have another test that's used as a weed out. So I think it's on residencies to develop better characteristics or better ways to select students that they want. And that would be more transparent about that process would make it better for students overall.
And it's obvious too, that your interest in this, I mean, there's a pretty clear trickle down effect as well for any industry within the medical community. I feel like, is that accurate to say that, you know, you're thinking about this process and getting people more exposure to just the whole breadth of everything that you could potentially see as a professional. And we, you know, you think of it from the vasculitis perspective, I would think that has a direct impact, just it starting at that initial level and kind of continuing on.
Definitely. Yes. As I became further along in my education, I was interested in tutoring. So I used to tutor students for these step exams. And honestly, it's very difficult to get students to care when they have so many things to study. So the way I would get them to care about things like vasculitis, which I was interested in, was to show them how the exam would test these diseases. And in residency, I've had medical students still, and I continue to give them lectures. The good thing is, at least when you're in the clinical setting, you can provide them like clear examples of patients and how it affects management. But when you're in medical school, to sort through the insane amount of information you need to learn, the only way to get students' attention is to show them that this is going to be tested on your exam. So it's unfortunate that we're in this situation, but that's just kind of how it is.
That's really interesting. I know that when I was in the hospital, I was told that I was used as a case study for a lot of the Georgetown medical classes, just because they were not expecting, a 23-year-old to present with GPA vasculitis. So have you found that students, react better to having real-world people that they can actually see these diseases in? Does that help, do you think, or is it really just coming down to the test?
I think it does help once they reach the clinical side. And in my experience, the students I've worked with have literally never seen a person with vasculitis. They've only learned about it in textbooks. So when I tell them that I work with the Vasculitis Foundation and I know many patients that have this, they're always very surprised because they didn't realize that this disease that they only learn about, like, one case per 10 million, I think is the incidence. They didn't realize that there are people walking around that they don't know that have this disease, and they had to go through like all the symptoms that they learned about in a textbook. So I think having a real person that you can put like as a face for the disease will definitely help people not only learn it, but also feel like more empathy towards that population.
Yeah, I had the same experience upon diagnosis, and I'm sure it was even heightened for you, Kaylee, being in more of a medical center. But like even for me, there were a stream of rheumatologists and pulmonologists who had been in the business in the medical field for 20, 30 years, and I was the first person they had seen, and that included my parents as well, who were ER doctors. And it's kind of the same thing. You see it once in a textbook. Doesn't really correlate to real life experience until you actually see it. And it kind of leads into what is the big overarching question that we've always asked and we've never really had a good answer for, and that is just diagnosis in general. And I'm curious what have been the biggest things that have stood out to you as you've kind of gone through your own training and seeing this because of just knowing that difficulty, knowing all the different factors that go into a diagnosis, and maybe some of the things that you've learned from people like Dr. Duo or people you've trained under, because that is kind of the multi-million dollar question, at least as it pertains to our specific disease, and not just any, and not just GPA, not just DGPA, but really everything within the community.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a difficult question because, as I mentioned, the disease is so rare. So it is very common to see doctors who've gone their entire career and can count the number of cases on one hand. I will say what's been beneficial to me personally is to hear from patients who have the disease. So for me, I went and sought out these patients through like the Vasculitis Foundation. But I've noticed that societies, like specialty societies, will sometimes invite patients to speak about their experience. And I think for vasculitis patients, it's usually rheumatology that does this because they're like the main primary care essentially for vasculitis. However, given the like multi organs that are involved, I think it would be very helpful for patients to reach out or to go speak at conferences that are for non-rheumatologists. So for example, like dermatology, I can only think of like one or two dermatologists I know that have like a specialty on vasculitis. But it's a very common presenting finding of vasculitis. So I'm sure residents and other doctors who are maybe not as academic would benefit from hearing from patients because they could see in their practice, they might have a lesion that's suspicious for this, but vasculitis wouldn't even be on their top 10 diseases just because of how rare it is. And the same goes for like ophthalmology or cardiology, other specialties you might not think of immediately, but would still technically see manifestations of vasculitis.
When you talk about lesions that are suspicious of vasculitis, are there, I guess I don't know a ton about the purpura because I never presented with any rashes actually, but are there rashes that, might be confused with vasculitis? Do you see that confusion fairly frequently in your dermatology practice or not really?
So
Is it
the
like
purpura, that's kind of the stereotype lesion for vasculitis. The challenge is that purpura can be caused by many things. So vasculitis can be a primary vasculitis, which is one of the many diseases we learn about, like GPA or EGPA. But the thing is, it can also be caused secondary to other conditions. So secondary to a bacterial infection, a viral infection, a drug, another autoimmune disease like lupus or Sjogren's. So I think practitioners need to understand that the skin is just one component of the overall picture, and they need to be able to piece together, this patient mentioned these two or three other things, like what disease would that correlate to? But also important to like take a thorough history and to learn about all their exposures. As you know, Kaylee, there's so much that's not known about what causes vasculitis. So I think for the doctor, the job is to kind of be the detective and figure out everything and then decide like what the most likely diagnosis is.
Yeah, and I think about it too, just in the whole context of when you present with all these different symptoms, and it obviously varies from disease to disease, but I wonder if you've seen anything just with a specific study in that part of it, if you've maybe seen a correlation to more patients getting that specific type of rash or the purpura maybe later in their pre-diagnosis stage, or if it's been something that has been earlier that's then accompanied by some of these other conditions. Like I know for me, that was really the last thing I had within the last few weeks before my diagnosis. So I wonder if that's something that you've seen it enough in enough patients that you can start to at least have a little better idea of maybe where to track it, maybe where that falls into, you know, that overall equation.
Yeah, the challenge is I'm only about 8 months into residency, so I haven't seen that many cases personally, at least that I've personally taken care of in the hospital. Based on just general reading that I've done, the skin findings are not always present. So if they're present, it's actually very helpful because you can get dermatology involved immediately. Sometimes you can do a skin biopsy, which is much less invasive than these other things like a kidney or a lung biopsy. And if you can show vasculitis on that, then that kind of points you directly towards that diagnosis. The challenge, though, is a lot of patients come in with really non-specific findings. So they might have like weight loss or trouble sleeping, headaches. I mean, these can be caused by all sorts of things. And vasculitis would be so low on your list that they might not even send a test for 2 or 3 months until things come back negative. So my kind of thing when I teach medical students is that, you know, we always kind of fixate on the most common things, which are like cancer, you know, TB, things that you hear about all the time, but always at least consider vasculitis in the back of your head. If these initial things come back negative, that should be another thing that you're thinking about.
I guess just in addition to the diagnostic work, you've talked a lot about just your involvement with the Vasculitis Foundation and, you know, the talks that you've given at different symposiums. I guess, can you just talk a little bit about, you know, what got you involved with VF, what kind of resources VF has provided you as a medical professional, and just kind of give our listeners a little bit of background on that?
Sure. So I heard about the Vasculitis Foundation when I had a lecture from Dr. Dua, who was originally at University of Chicago, where I was a student, and now she's at Northwestern. And I stayed in touch with her because I wanted to get involved with some kind of research and clinical experience as a student, and I was so interested in vasculitis. So she told me to come to this conference that was happening in Chicago. So I went to it, and what's interesting about this conference compared to other conferences I've been to is that patients and doctors are both like a part of this conversation. Usually medical conferences are just doctors giving lectures about the research they've done, and everyone kind of talks about the ongoing trends in the specialty. But this was different because everything was geared towards how are we going to actually impact patient lives. So there was talks about, you know, mind-body meditation, talks about lifestyle, diet, those kind of things. And I found that very interesting because doctors usually don't know about a lot of this. We don't learn this in medical school. So throughout the next couple of months and years, I stayed involved with the foundation, just hearing about the latest updates. And Joyce and some of the other leadership of the group were very nice in providing me a platform to speak about some things that I cared about. So I did give a one-hour webinar on health policy changes, during the election and some of the ongoing trends in health policy. And I was able to give that as a formal talk at the symposium as well and get some feedback from actual attendees. So it's been kind of a nice relationship where I've been interested to hear about patients' stories and their background. And as like a new doctor who just graduated medical school, a lot of people are interested in hearing how medical education and healthcare are changing in general.
Yeah, and as somebody who was in the room for that that presentation, you did a great job, first off.
Thank you.
But I think what's interesting and I think unique to our community, not saying that other communities of rare disease groups aren't, but just that vasculitis patients in general, I feel like, are, and I think part of it is because we have really advocated for that self-advocacy as patients and learning about the disease and being aware of everything. And I'm sure as you saw with that patients are really, really quick and aggressive to, you know, to bring up their own experiences to maybe not necessarily challenge what you have to say, but ask questions and follow up and kind of really make you think critically as a whole. And so what did you think as far as a benefit to that? Cause I feel like there was feedback and a lot of good feedback to what you had to say. I'm sure it's like a dream scenario for a young doctor like you, where so often, as you were alluding to, it's mostly a lack of information and there's just not much there, especially when you're trying to diagnose somebody. So what sort of things did you take away from just your own interaction with patients, just as far as some of the things maybe you hadn't thought about before, or some of the things that they asked in relation to your own talk?
Well, the first thing I noticed was that it's the media and the way that the political climate is these days tends to put people into boxes, like you're right or left, or you're Democrat, Republican, or whatever. But when it comes to health and disease, there's basically no boundaries. Everybody is affected by this, regardless of what your background is. And it was very nice to hear people come and talk about something that's very personal to them. And they kind of had their own specific solution for that problem. So I've heard people say, like, this is why we need a single payer healthcare system. This is why everybody should have healthcare insurance. And I hear that perspective. And then other people are like, you know, government cannot manage anything. Like, we should just have private everything. So it was just interesting to hear everybody's perspective. But it was never from a way of that, I'm going to put someone down, I'm going to trash them. It's more like, we have this problem that we all agree on, and we want a solution. Maybe we disagree on some of those solutions. So as someone who studies public policy, it was very helpful to see that there is a lot of common ground we still have, and there's a lot of ways we can work together, even if we don't agree 100% on the solutions.
Definitely. And I think that's one of the strengths of the Vasculitis Foundation in general, is that the patients are centered in it, and that the goal is better treatment, better diagnosis. And I think sometimes Vasculitis Foundation talks about cure, but basically making sure that that is the center point of all of the work that they do. And that's something that I think, for me as a patient, has been really powerful, because I think that's not, as you mentioned, always the way that things shake out. So it really is very helpful, I think.
I've also noticed that a lot of doctors, when they finish residency, they're really hesitant to talk about anything related to medicine. It comes from a place of humility where we haven't learned enough medicine to really give advice to patients. But for me, I was interested in just hearing from patients and learning about them, because I felt like it would make me better in the future to hear like that personal experience. One of the reasons I got into dermatology as well was that one of my family members has a skin condition. So I kind of grew up hearing about this personally, and I knew that it would make me a better doctor to hear about these personal stories. So I'm glad that the symposium gave opportunities for doctors from like all levels of training to also talk about these issues.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And it's been great to see just the development, especially from the patient side of things, with how many doctors have put in the time, put in the research to study a lot of these developments. And I guess what it kind of transitions to is, as we're getting ready to wrap up here, is for you, it's kind of interesting to ask as far as next steps, because some of the doctors we've had have obviously been practicing for decades and they've been in these research studies. Whereas for you, I mean, you're in kind of a crazy time right now. You're in the middle of residency and doing a pretty busy stretch of your own medical career, just getting things started. So how do you kind of include some of your own desires to learn more about vasculitis, to get involved with these studies? What's sort of the process like as you go forward now into the future, where you're as busy as anybody in the field just starting out, but you also want that balance as well?
Well, I found that for medicine, there's basically a shortage of doctors. So there's always ways to get involved, and there's always aspects of medicine that other people haven't studied as much. So like I was mentioning, I haven't seen that many dermatologists that are really focused on vasculitis. So that's definitely something going forward I'd like to learn more about. And I'm very privileged that I've matched at Georgetown for my residency. It's right in DC, where the NIH is nearby. There's a lot of clinical trials going on. So it's nice to be in an environment that supports that kind of research. And also, I think because of the ongoing pandemic, I'm optimistic eventually this will be over, but the next thing will be, how do we reform the system so we, A, prevent future pandemics like this, and B, we make it better for patients that are dealing with these challenges. I do think in history there have been – crises have always been accompanied by, like, major policy changes. So it's important for doctors, patients, anyone in healthcare to be involved with what happens after the coronavirus. How do we reform our system to be better going forward?
Yeah, it's a great point you make. I think we're all kind of on pins and needles. Nobody really knows what is next, but it's at least nice to know that somebody like you, Doctor, you're saying you're kind of in the forefront of the thinking there, and you've obviously been very active on all of this. I feel like we could talk a lot longer. I was just thinking about, you know, our experience and getting to meet you back in 2017, and just how much has changed, how much positivity has infiltrated our own community since then with all the different developments. And obviously you and a lot of other doctors have been a part of that. So I know Kaylee and I are both appreciative of it, and we're glad that we could take some time just to learn about your own process today and just kind of what goes into that from the doctor's mindset as somebody who is kind of up and coming and learning a lot quickly about this crazy disease that has had an impact on all of us.
Yeah, we really just want to thank you for coming on, because I think it's really special to have, you know, as Ben mentioned, we've had a lot of doctors who have been practicing for a while. You know, they have kind of set ways of thinking about their practice and their research, and, you know, it's cutting edge, but it's definitely something that they've been practicing for a while. I think it's really helpful, particularly for our listeners, to hear perspective on education for new doctors and really what directions we should be taking at that level. So I really think it's been a helpful episode. So we're really appreciative of your time.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to stay involved if you guys need anything else.
Absolutely. Dr. Hussain again joining us. Kaylee and I will come back. We'll wrap up the episode right after this. Really cool interview we got to do with Dr. Hussain. Ben and Kaylee back with you as we wrap up this episode of the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast. And as I had pointed out to Amir at the end there, Kaylee, it's been sort of surreal to just see the process from, I think from all of us, being back in 2017. And I remember meeting Dr. Hussain, and at the time just a student who was, it was sort of weird to see a kid that young, not, you know, only a few years older than we were, just take such an interest in vasculitis as a whole. But it's been really cool to see his development now and as a young doctor kind of leading the charge, especially in that next wave of young docs. And I felt like a lot of valuable, useful knowledge that I think even seasoned medical professionals could take away.
Absolutely. And for me, it was particularly interesting because, like I mentioned, Dr. Hussain and I took biology classes together in college. And so to have one of us end up as a vasculitis patient and one of us end up as a vasculitis practitioner is just kind of crazy to me, considering how rare all of this is.
That Georgetown connection. I mean, like it's
gotta yeah. love it.
yeah, at the University of Missouri, I had no such thing. I also was not smart particularly, so I was not in biology classes in college. So I think that also prevented from that side of things. But I mean, probably for the best. But yeah, a really good chat with Dr. Hussain, and it's a good way, I think, to kind of bookend these last couple episodes, Kaylee, where we. We talked with the Andersons, you have that patient-doctor duo. I'm trying to figure out diagnosis in that sense, and then as well as the young adults and trying to figure out a lot of their concerns with the current virus crisis. And someone like Dr. Hussain, he's one of many right now who are dealing with this on a very up-close and personal level. So I know we're obviously wishing him the best as he continues with that, and hopefully better times are ahead as the curve starts to flatten out.
I agree. I really hope that we're able to get a handle on this soon. But I'm excited for our next episode. I'd like to encourage everyone to tune in. We are going to be talking to Dr. Julian McGregor and Dr. Will Pendergraft from the Integrative Medicine Medical Clinic of North Carolina. So they talk a lot about how it's not just about, you know, pharmaceutical treatment for vasculitis. It's also looking at your health holistically. So thinking about diet, thinking about exercise, mental health, all of it. And so I think that's going to be a little different than what we've talked about previously and should be really interesting.
Especially pertains to a time like right now, where I think we could all use that type of discussion, and especially as it pertains to a lot of us who are patients and always trying to figure out ways, and especially for medical professionals too, thinking about ways to treat patients in kind of new and innovative ways. So you're completely on point with that, Kaylee, and we'll be looking forward to that episode. Of course, you can go through wherever you listen to your podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can go through our complete archive at this point, as we've had a number. We're at about a half dozen now episodes we've recorded. So if you missed any of them, go through the archives and find them. And we will be speaking with that duo here in the next couple of weeks. So for Kaylee, I'm Ben, saying so long. Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of the Vasculitis Visionaries podcast.